Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
So, you know, part of good marketing, you gotta have good subject lines. But then giving them, you know, my perspective on that particular article, you know, it was like, it's people ask me, what am I smelling here? I'm like, I have no freaking clue what you're smelling. You know, I know what I'm smelling. Can I articulate that? Maybe, maybe not. You know, but I always say, like, you know, wine really all boils down to is, do you like it or not?
Yeah.
But, you know, I got tons of replies, and it had nothing about sales. It wasn't like, hey, read this article and then buy wine at the bottom. No, it was not at all. It's just, here's a little bit of value, and here's my perspective as a winemaker. You know, and I threw in, like, you know, people ask, when should I drink this? You know, or when's the right drinking window for this wine? I'm like, man, that's such a subjective thing to ask, too, because you may like old-aged wines. I like young wines. So if I answer the question based on what I think, it's the wrong answer for you personally because you like older wines. You prefer flavors of, like, more aged wines. So it's like, it's a subjective thing, and you kind of have to figure that out for yourself. I can tell you, you know, roughly, chemically speaking or whatever, structurally speaking, you know, yeah, it'll last 20 years or whatever, but again, that's, I like it right now. So anyway, people were digging that one. you know, communicating about the fires back in 17,
of course,
all that stuff. Yeah,
it sounds like you took on a role of a brand ambassador, not just your own brand, mm-hmm. but maybe Napa and maybe wine as a phenomenon in general. Mm. And those communications that you put forth, I think, create those relationships that are solid. You can then ask somebody to support you.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't mind that, you know, if that's the case. Because I feel like Napa can get a bad rap, you know, in the marketplace, you know, when you compare regions and whatnot. You know, you hear it all the time. You know, being that I'm in this industry, you know, some people have a negative opinion of Napa. It's, mm-hmm. it's too snooty and this and that, and it's, you know, it's pretentious. And I'm like, I can understand why you would think that, but let me be the example of why we're not all like that, you know?
Leading by example.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
You know, so when I'm out in other cities and whatever, you know, I try hard to really, you know, hold myself in a certain way and act a certain way, and, you know, not, and it's totally authentic. It's exactly who I am, because I care about what people think about this valley. You know, I want people to think well of it, you know, and I hate to hear, and I, when I see examples of people being, you know, douchey or whatever, I'm one of the first ones to call them out, you know, like, that's by the way, that's not how we all are. Don't pay too much attention to that guy. Like, a lot of us are pretty cool, you know.
You know, leading by example is always the healthiest approach. It's not the fastest. I mean, I think a lot of people see how glamorous Napa is, how pricey, and they have this kind of instant gratification syndrome when they think that it all happens overnight. And what you're describing is a long, arduous, quite painful, full of sacrifice journey that you now can own and fully inhabit and project all of the sum of the experiences that you've had, and you can channel it positively and to tell people, this is really a blessed region and I'm lucky to be here, but it takes a lot more than meets the eye. And I think that's a message that needs to be propagated. There's a lot of conversation these days, particularly in the marketing world, I would say there's an obsession with millennials. You and I are not that generation. But I keep thinking, why is it that we're isolating that group and think that somehow we need to communicate differently with them? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that millennials, what we know about millennials, or what we think we know about millennials, is that they're experience-based purchasers, right?
Yep.
They they want to go to the coolest places so they can get that selfie in that cool place and post it on Instagram to prove they've been there and whatever. So, like, you know, for wineries, we'll say, like, they want to go to the cool wineries, but they're not, like, baby boomers would walk out with a case, right? Millennials are going to walk out with a couple bottles, maybe, you know, so they don't buy as much. They want the experience, but, you know, I feel like they will, as they age and come into their own when it comes to, like, finances and their own successes and whatnot, you know, they will grow into wine more than they are now. So, I mean, I'm not counting them out. I just, yeah, they're just not, I don't think they'll be as big of buyers as the boomers were. And the boomers are petering out too, because they're all realizing, shit, man, I'm pretty old. I have more wine than I can drink. If I drink every day for the rest of my life, mm-hmm. I'll never get through all this stuff. So when they come out, they're not pulling the trigger as hard as they used to. And so there's, you know, it's kind of like a millennials coming and they're leaving. And it's like this closing window of the good times, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, wineries need to be smart about the experience that they provide. You know, everyone likes, like you said, everyone likes to be made to feel special, right? So, you know, your experience should kind of speak to that. Like for us, I mean, we're number one on TripAdvisor right now, which is pretty cool.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And it's a blessing and a curse, I think. When, I feel like we were better at number two.
Oh, yeah. Serious.
The reason is that when you're number one, people want to experience the ride. So they're there for the experience, not necessarily for the right reason for us, which is to support the brand and buy wines. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not in the tasting fee business. I don't like charging tasting fees. I don't want to charge tasting fees. But we had to raise our fee just to kind of, like, keep, you know, almost like it's like an imaginary gate.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a number. Hopefully scares off people who just want to come pay tasting fees and leave.
Right.
You know, and that's all it's really there for. Because, again, yeah. Someone came to our experience and they literally, you know, they liked the wines. They just didn't buy anything.
Yeah.
And I would be like, look, I'm not in the tasting fee business. How about we take the total tasting fee and we apply that towards wine? That way you're walking out with something.
Yep.
You know, I hate to see people leave empty-handed, and it almost never happens because our wines aren't expensive, especially for this valley. And, you know, we just make it easy to not have to do that. But either way, so I'm, you know, we try to personalize our tastings as much as we can. We talk to everyone before they come. What are you into? We try to help them with other places they're going, you know, and really just be a friend, you know?
You know, that's amazing. I mean, you just described a real formidable problem.
Mm-hmm.
This generation that's currently participating actively or slowing down from active participation is mm-hmm. on its way out, and the new one is not going to step up under the best of circumstances to that volume.
Mm-hmm.
So addressing that gap, I feel like what you're saying is there's no silver bullet. There's not one thing that's going to solve that problem. It has to be a multi-pronged approach. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think. You know, people just need to be smarter about their growth, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I made the choices that I made with my business. Were they the right choices? I mean, I only make 1,800 cases of wine a year. Just under 2,000. So that's not a whole lot, especially for 15 years of making wine. So maybe I've made a lot of bad decisions over the course of running this business, you know? And if I'd made different decisions, maybe it'd be 5,000 cases or 10,000 cases. You know, maybe I'd, you know, be a little bit less less stressed, as like I always am, but I don't know. It is what it is, right? We live our life and make your decisions. I mean, I'm one thing that I'm doing, I'm really pumped about, like, to your question about millennials and experience-based marketing or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, I look at the trend here in Napa, which is two things happening. 16, 17, and 18 years, right? 2016, 17, there have been a constant decrease in visitation in Napa. Every mm-hmm. year, less and less people are coming here. Mm-hmm. Couple reasons. One is it's very expensive to come here. Mm-hmm. You know, hotels in high season are like $450, $500, $600, $700 a night for a basic ass restaurant or a hotel.
Easy.
So, you know, you're going to spend a couple of nights, at least two or three nights. I mean, that's it. You know, I did the math. Let's say you're flying from Dallas. We'll just say Dallas is the middle of the country. Mm-hmm. Fly over to Napa. 2 days of wine tasting for two people after you pay for your flights, your hotels, your rental car, your car service, because you don't want to be drinking and driving. You know, your meals, and we'll just say tasting fees without buying a single bottle of wine. It's $5,500, right? For two people. So, I mean, it would take like a, you know, a almost C-level executive or C-level, you know, employee to have really that kind of disposable income to just come and do it. And that's before they buy their first bottle of wine. You start buying wines, I mean, it's you know how the prices are here. It's very easily, you can drop $1,200 on a case of cab. I mean, that's like for a basic $100 bottle of wine. I mean, that's like, they're everywhere here. So, you know, now we're looking like a $10,000 trip.
You got to really be committed to the wine easily. Country, yeah.
So here we are, us wineries. The trend is down. People are coming less and less. But they're still coming. And so our experiences have changed that we offer people. Mm-hmm. In the old days, people would walk up to the bar and they would have 10 people standing in different groups along the bar. You're serving multiple people. The experience is 30, maybe 35 minutes from beginning to end. You get your couple bottles of wine and you go on to the next one. You hit six wineries in a day. Nowadays, everyone is doing the private, you know, exclusive, one-on-one, 90-minute experience. And so, I mean, just do the math on number of hours in a day or business hours. If you're really efficient, you can only do three a day.
Yeah.
So that reduces the number of visitation again.
Yep.
And so here we are. All these wineries are all competing for the same butts and the same seats, right? And we also want to make sure that they're right butts in seats, you know, because if you just get people who just want to come look and enjoy the experience and then leave, that's not what we're here for. We're here to sell wines and make friends, right? So it's just compounding as it just gets harder and harder and harder. To like, it's kind of grim, you know, yeah. If you think about it. So in our experience, I can only, you know, based on where we operate out of, we share this room with, you know, four other wineries that we kind of shared calendar. You get 2-hour blocks three times a day, right? So if we're really, really efficient and no one else has booked the rooms, we can do three tastings a day. Almost always, we can only do two and sometimes just one because the other time slots are booked with other people. So one chance a day, right? So we're just super limited. We get requests all the time. Sometimes it's just not the right fit for us because we want to make sure it's the right person in that seat, you know? Mm-hmm. So we have to regretfully turn away people, you know, but not like a cold hard no. It's like, you know, we're committed. Thank you very much for wanting to come with, you know, hang out with us. We're honored. Let me help you get into another place that, you know, maybe we'll have a space for you, you know. And really what that means is, you know, you've never been to Napa, this is your first time to visit, you're going to the castle, you're going to Sterling, you're going to, not really sure this is the right fit, you know. Yeah. And not to be a jerk about it, but I mean, you know, I got a business to run. We got one chance sometimes.
Yep.
I can't really, you know, roll the dice on, you know, the guy who just wants to pick up a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc and see you later. It's like, that's not working. So, anyway, I came up with an idea that I'm just now rolling out. I've been working on it for over a year, but it's so what I say to people, and I've been trying this out, do the tasting experience, you know, and we go to the end of it and everyone's had a great time. I'm like, okay, guys, let me ask you a question. What do you think about if there was a camera in the room recording and streaming what just happened? And if you were at your house in your living room with you know, six of your close wine loving friends, and I shipped all the, you know, in a beautiful lay down velvet lined, you know, vertical display box, the four wines you just tasted to your house, you log on, webinar kind of platform, I log on, I'm doing a live tasting in Napa with real guests, go through the same stories, the same cuss words, the same wines, same exact wines everyone's drinking in Napa, you're going to be drinking at your house. You can ask questions just like the people in the taste room can ask questions, get them answered live right on the thing. I was like, what do you think about that? And they're like, holy shit, dude, that's a freaking great idea. You know, so I'm doing this virtual tasting thing, like winemaker hosted virtual tasting, and talk about solving my problem and solving their problem. You know, you don't have to fly to Napa to enjoy the number one winery and TripAdvisor tasting experience, I should say. Winemaker hosted deal, you know, same exact wines delivered to your door. And that's an afternoon experience that you and your friends get to do. It's social. It's an experience, quote unquote, right? You didn't have to fly here to get it.
Wow.
And then they have access to the wines too. Because if you go to my website, like, you literally, there's only one wine you can buy. Everything else is like closed to like allocation or whatever, right? So as I say in the taste room, if you try to buy it online later, you're not going to be able to. You're here now. It's available. It's whatever you want. Same thing in the virtual thing, so they have access to the wines and to the club and all that. So talk about scalability for me, mm-hmm. and time and cost savings for them. It's a fun afternoon, and it's the barrier of entry cost-wise is very little.
Have you piloted it already?
Yep.
How does it work?
I mean, I just made it live on the website like last week.
Wow.
And I'm going to be sending out basically to some social media influencers. Going to be basically, here's this experience. I want you to do it. You try it. Give me your feedback. There's a cool thing about the platform that I use to deliver this is that it's not like a your regular webinar mm-hmm. platform. It's definitely built for that. But the cool thing is, like, the background is brandable. You can put like beautiful scenes of Napa mustard or whatever, mm-hmm, Napa mm-hmm. vines. You got your media player for the video. You got your Q&A box. You got your PowerPoint slides, and you can basically arrange your slides and deliver them, plug in a video, because mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen the videos that we make, but we've got some awesome videos, right? And so I do barrel fermentation for my cabs. When we get to talk about the cabs and the virtual tasting, I put this, in the slide presenter, put the video in there, and wow. It plays, and it's like, rather than me try to explain what I mean by, oh, I do barrel fermentations, watch this video, and the video is badass, it rocks, I mean, but it's just, I feel like the experience is going to be almost even better than being in person, because I'm going to be able to deliver more media in a more like fluid manner than I could in the taste room, just how it's set up.
Yeah, there's something similar that I've done a number of times with Brand Live, when there's a winemaker, mm-hmm. viticulturist, whatever, round table, mm-hmm. and then a bunch of media interacts with them, and then it's populated on yeah. Twitter and such like that. So what you're describing is basically you coming to their living room.
Yeah.
Bandwidth-wise, are you going to be able to do it yourself? I mean, I would say that there's, you know, almost exclusivity to that piece. You can't outsource it.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, the it's nice because once I have, and it's all done now, but all the PowerPoint and created and all the videos all arranged, mm-hmm. I can copy and paste to new mm-hmm. times in the future. Mm-hmm. And so the way I have it set up in my CRM and all that, you know, if people buy it, the pack, you know, then they the packet's sent out, all the communications are already, all the emails pre-written, they're all dripped out based on timing of purchase and, you know, what else, you know, behavioral stuff, like they'll get an email 7 days after, you know, it ships to confirm it's been delivered, because I want them to confirm it's been delivered before I let them pick the time. So once they yes, I confirm, here's the button, yes, it's been delivered, boom, here comes the web page with the times offered. We've already preset them, it's scheduled up at Brasswood, it's, you know, and they click that, and that registers them. All the reminders come to them automatically. We send them emails leading up so they can prepare digitally, meaning I don't want them to be, you know, feel like they have to watch this thing on their phone or their iPad or their computer. Stream it on your TV. If you're going to have eight people in the room, make sure it's on the TV. And so here's some technical advice on whatever system you have. Here's how you can get it on your TV. And give them that in plenty of time in advance so they can work out the kinks before it's game time, right? Whether it's mirroring your computer to your TV through Apple TV or the Chromecast little plug-in thing or whatever it is. Try to help people get set up. We send out, because we really want to create the same experience in their living room that we give to the people at the taste room. So we have these four cheeses that we always, you know, pair if people want it. Not everyone wants it, but these specific cheeses. So we send out, here are the links to the different cheeses. You can get those, have them there at your house, ready for the tasting. Here's the glassware that we use, and here's a link to Amazon for you can get a box of Riedel's. We use Zalto at the taste room. Those are not cheap, so I doubt most people will do that. But there's a link they can get the Zalto. What else? You know, wine preservation stuff. You know, like here's, have you ever heard of a Coravin? If it's just you and your husband, you may not want to pop four bottles of wine. You can get a Coravin and just try them and then try them again later and whatever. But this little tool, if you never heard of it, most people have, but you'd be surprised, some people haven't. Here's a link to that. Just you know, trying to create a cool experience, you know?
You know, what you're describing is so many more hats than a vintner.
Yeah.
Is it really, I'm thinking as we're talking, that is it really this day is a requirement, not even optional, to not just be a vintner and a business person, but also digital media savvy, but also concierge services, the tech aspects of it, utilizing it to its full potential. You mentioned social influencers. That's actually an interesting subject vis-a-vis wine in particular, because it's a highly glamorized, very desirable medium to play in. So a lot of people have penetrated, particularly younger with not a lot of experience, and kind of tend to skim the surface and focus on the selfie part of it and not really storytelling. So when you outsource your brand message to those people, whether by default or deliberately, I don't think that message is actually accurate then. And, you know, you're not targeting the right consumer.
Yeah.
Is that, because it sounds to me like you very much own your branding.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I plan to send it out to a few of those people. You know, and I look at them too. I make sure that sometimes it's total bullshit, you know. Like if you have 20,000 followers, then you look at the average number of likes and comments on their posts and stuff, it's like, that's a 0.8% engagement rate, not great, you know? So
yeah,
a lot of it's totally fake.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not hard to buy, you know, followers and likes and stuff. That's not hard at all. You got to find the ones that have, like, true, you know, at least a 5 to 10% engagement rate, and that's what I usually try to focus on. But I mean, one of my club members, and I wouldn't have any trust in this at all if it wasn't for what I'm about to tell you, but you know, whether it's bullshit or not, I don't know. For this guy, it's completely not bullshit. So he owns this a supplement company, cool guy, Ryan Hughes. He's like, you know, I mean, he's on a He's a guy that you put on the cover of a magazine. He's a beautiful man, right? Anyway, the you know, supplement company, protein shakes and all that kind of stuff, you know, amino acids. So brand new business, they've been around for like 3 years, something like that. They hired this guy in Houston who has like, you know, 500,000 or whatever, a couple million followers on YouTube, his YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. Almost every one of his videos that he makes, these video blogs, gets, you know, within a week, 250,000 views. Mm-hmm. So a lot of really good high-end, you know, true engagement, you know, people really watching. And so he hired this guy, not to be like, hey guys, check out this protein shake, it's really good, you should buy it. And he said, we told the guy, don't ever do, you know, chinchy or whatever, you know, tchotchke stuff like that, like don't do that, just have it be part of your daily routine. When you're doing your videos in the morning, get out of bed, go down to the kitchen, make yourself a protein shake, however it fits in your life, do it naturally, do it organically. And and all he does is puts the affiliate link in the description below, right? He goes, you wouldn't believe how much this guy sells. He goes, every month, him alone is accountable for like $120,000 in supplement sales. Just him alone. And they have like five or six of these guys. You know, they pay him a good monthly base, and then he gets commission on top of that. So, I mean, the guy's raking in more money than I make just for doing his daily thing. And it's crazy. But he goes, that's an example of how a quote-unquote influencer, you know, done the right way, can
be powerful.
Be powerful, exactly. You know.
It sounds like you're learning from, you mm-hmm. know, multiple sources, just like you've done your whole life. But kind of hearing you speak, you are your own influencer. You may outsource bits and pieces, but, you know, your relationship with your client, I think you hold it sacred.
Yeah.
I think that's, to you, your end user is the king, and you built your business around their needs and wants. Is that your mentality?
Yeah, I mean, I say half and half. You know, it's a lot of it's, you know, it's half them, half me. You know, like I make wines that I want to drink, and I definitely, you know, don't go with some of the trends because some people want to drink it or whatever. It's you know, I've never gotten into the natural wine thing. I think that's totally mm-hmm. not my thing at all. I think it's dumb, and I think those wines don't taste that great, so I'll never make them. But someone else will do that. That's fine. And those will be their customers. But I mean, nothing makes my day more. I got one of these the other day. Than getting an email from a, you know, a happy customer. Hey, or getting a random text message with someone who's drinking my wine in some awesome restaurant or something like that, and they liked it enough to want to share that with me, you know? And I think that they think that them having the ability and access to do that is what creates a true relationship, you know? That's why I put my number on the back of the bottle. You know, I want people to be able to get a hold of me because, you know, not to, you know, toot a horn or anything like that, but like, you know, I'm the guy. I'm the guy who makes it. I run it. I own it. And a lot of people don't often get access to like the main figure in a business, especially if it's something that they may love or be passionate about themselves. It's like, just because you watched a movie and you really love the movie, do you think you're going to be able to call the actor and be like, hey man, that was an awesome scene you did? You're never going to get that access, you know, it just doesn't happen. But, you know, I can make that an option, you know, with this. And I think people love that. They love to be able to, like, you know, I mean, I was, you know, I have a little chat box on my website for, you know, quick access and all that. And, you know, when the chat comes through, I got an app, pops up on my phone, and so literally I got this chat that came up, and I'm answering this guy's questions, like, real time, and then he asked me something. I said, hey, do you mind if I get back to you? I'm literally in the shower right now. And the guy was like, you gotta be kidding me, you know? Like, I go, nope, I have one of those NATO mounts in my shower, so I just magnetized my phone to the wall and you know, listen to music, watch YouTube videos or whatever, and shower. And so that's, I was in the shower and the chat came up and I answered the chat and the guy loved it. He was like, that's the coolest thing I've heard all day, you know? But again, getting the cool text messages, or just like I said, 2 days ago, I got an email from a guy that, you know, took a time out of his day to write me a 3-paragraph email about how great his experience was in the tasting room with Caitlin. I wasn't there, so it was all her praise, and, you know, the praise for the wines and praise for her. And, you know, I was like, man, you have no idea how much this just made my day, you know. And we're blessed to have her. She's for me, it's hard to give up control of my branding and of my story, right? You know, mm-hmm. It was to hire someone to do tastings for me, like 90% of the time, wasn't easy. You know, because when I've tried to give up control of certain aspects of the business in the past, almost all the time it ends up biting me in the ass, right? And this was a decision that I made in 2017, and to hire someone to do that, and it was the best decision that I've made in years. You know, so originally it was this guy Mario. He was awesome, and then he got poached by Caldwell. They took him away, but it's all good. We're still very close friends. And then Caitlin, I hired her. And again, it's just like to find someone that I trust to tell my story and to relay what I want to be relayed about my brand and the wines and all that is very hard to do, to find a person like that. And so I got to take good care of her and make sure she sticks around, you know?
Well, again, as compelling as your story is, there's so many out there that mm-hmm. the challenge is not to get lost, and the challenge to identify your tribe that mm-hmm. believes in you. And if I were to write an article about you or just like a header for the story, it keeps popping up that word access. To validate further your sentiments, I was in Kentucky recently and I had a little bit of extra time and I was curious about Buffalo Trace. And mm-hmm. I looked at their website, and their CEO's phone number and email address is on their website.
Cool. Nice.
Very similar to your philosophy.
Yeah.
And I learned later that he actually answers emails and phone, which blew me away, because the size alone of that business is mind-boggling. So the fact that you've adopted a very similar model, and it works so well, clearly, because your business have grown, mm-hmm. you get a lot of love like you described, and you get to live every day what you believe. You know, you spoke earlier about whether or not other decisions, this is a sliding doors concept, you know, it's a fork in the road. Mm-hmm. You made this decision, you could have grown faster, you could have. But at the end of the day, what struck me throughout the conversation is that you're immensely self-aware. Mm. And that's a huge value. And wherever that takes you, it's a really huge asset. Mm. So I want to talk to you about your wine making, both for your brand and mm-hmm. others, and then we'll move on to my favorite subject, which is the wines themselves and mm-hmm. your portfolio. Are you currently consulting with other people?
Yep, I got a few clients right now. Doing less of that. We're opening a tasting room over in Danville right now. Yeah, me and a couple guys. So we're basically kind of bringing wine country to that neighborhood.
Is Keel Anderson one of them?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. And who's the other?
The conclusion of this interview can be found in the next podcast, already available for your download. Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson.